Our first 10-minute speaker is Julie.
Thank you very much. My name is Julie, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. My sobriety date is December 2nd, 2003. The Atlanta Group is my home group. I'm in steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. My sponsor's name is Lisa. My grand sponsor is Marlena. My great-grand sponsor is Clancy. I missed him last week. I was in New Zealand with my parents and my sister, my family, and that is a gift of sobriety, and we're all alive, and that's a gift of sobriety. I have a little jet lag, so I feel a little... Okay. I grew up in Virginia. My parents were atheist New York Jews, and... I don't remember exactly the event that in which I picked up. I was always allowed to have a little nipsy with just about anything. I did pick out up the outside issues at that time as well. And I was pretty young. I was about 11, and my sister was a couple years older than me. And you know, it was kind of revealing to me. You know, I was driving in New Zealand with my mom and my dad, and I was driving on the left side of the road, and I was frightened, and I was getting a little ticked off that I was spending my vacation doing this. And I remember that, you know, my parents used to drive us, you know, down to the beach with the trailer, and you know, we would get out of the... We would get wherever we were going, and my sister and I would go, and we would get drunk, and we'd get into trouble. And I've got a shortened version of the St. Francis prayer that my friend Josh gave me on my bracelet, and I sort of had this, and I kept reading it on my bracelet, and remembered that, you know, what they'd done for me, and I remembered the pain that I had put them through. And it occurred to me while I was on vacation with them that maybe I could start thinking about what I could bring to this situation instead of what I could take. And that kind of thinking is something that I've only gotten through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's made me feel like I am a person among people, a family member among my family, and that I actually have a purpose in life, which I didn't feel that I had when I was drinking. And I spent a lot of time, I have a lot of really brilliant denial. My whole drinking career, I always found people that drank harder than me. I don't have a huge physical tolerance for alcohol. And if you put a drink in front of me, I could not leave it alone until I fell off a chair. You know, once I put it in my body, I could not stop. But I stopped a lot sooner because I got drunk really fast. And, you know, the outside stuff, the dry goods, really helped me with that. And it helped me drink the way I really, really needed to drink in order to keep up. And I had a couple of relationships. You know, I'm an AA widow for a long time. You know, they would join AA, and that was it for me. You know, and it just never really occurred to me that this was, you know, that I was an alcoholic. It just didn't occur to me. I had a shrink that I went to for a decade at least, and you know, she would ask me to give her 30 days, and I would just lie and say, you know, okay, it's April 7th, there's my month, I'm ready to go again, even though I'd probably already been drinking for 2 weeks. I was on antidepressants, just really didn't think that it was, you know, me, that I was an alcoholic. And I kept my job. I had a huge sense of entitlement. I trained my whole life as an actress. I went to a high school for the arts and went to a college, and I trained in college. And, you know, I got out of college and nobody was, you know, shipping me off to Hollywood, as brilliant and talented as I am. You know, and I took office jobs, and I got a really good office job. I was working for an incredibly famous, well-respected journalist. I've been working for him for the last 15 years. I stole from him. You know, I drank at work. I did other things at work. You know, I lied. I cheated. Everything. I slept with people's husbands. I slept with their best friend's husband. I just felt like, you know, it was just okay because I didn't get what I wanted out of life. I would do this thing where I heard somebody say it in the rooms early on in my sobriety, and it meant a lot to me. I drank poison and I hoped the other person died. And that's how I live my life. And what happened was I picked up a guy on the internet, and we had a couple of dates. Not really. They weren't really dates. And and I knew he was sober, though. And I asked, you know, I sent him an IM. I was like, you know, I'm thinking about going to AA. What's a good meeting to go to? And he told me. And, you know, I went to a meeting called Saturday Beginners on 16th Street, and I trudged over there in the snow because I didn't want him to think, you know, that I was flaky. And so I walked over there, and there were a couple of guys that sort of knew in that capacity at that meeting, and I wanted to be launched out of my seat. I was so uncomfortable. And they gave me a beginner's packet, so I had this manila envelope, and I sat down next to a woman, and she asked me after the speaker spoke. And by the way, she wasn't really paying that much attention to the speaker, and I just thought that was heinous. And she asked me if I was counting days, and I didn't know what that meant. She said, you know, when was the last time you had a drink or drug? And, you know, I think it had been 5 days. And so, you know, she said, put up your hand, and she said, well, what meeting are you going to tomorrow? And, you know, I said, you know, I'm in therapy. I don't really need this. You know, maybe like once a week I could augment my therapy. And she said, well, why don't you meet me, you know, at this other meeting tomorrow, and you come a little early and we'll have coffee. And for me, you know, I think maybe everybody, maybe they don't, I don't know. It might, you know, everybody has that sort of like Bill walks into the lobby and like does a thing, and it's like, well, you know, he actually goes to the phone booth. You know, I actually went that next day, and, you know, I actually met her for coffee, and she's still my sponsor. And, you know, I'm really lucky. That's it. Because I don't know that I really in my heart don't believe that I hit the bottom that I was meant to hit. I was really lucky. You know, I used to drive down. I went to college up near White Plains, and I used to drive down in my Volkswagen Rabbit. And my friend, I went to college with him, and he was in the car. And, you know, we would drive down to the city, and, you know, we'd get really loaded, and we'd drive back. And I've never had a moving violation. You know, I was able to maintain this job that I had, and I never got caught stealing. You know, bad things happen, but not that bad. You know, it was all kind of looming there for me. It was waiting to happen, and, you know, there was really divine intervention. I'm just very, very lucky. And I did some really frightening 9-step amends, and I looked that man, that icon of the 20th century, in the eye, and I told him that I'd stolen from him. And, you know, I paid him back, and I've been able to be of service to him and that was a huge turning point in my sobriety. The promises that we read happened for me in the 9th step, where they belong in the big book. I'm grateful to some of the people here that I got to talk to about that amends. It was really frightening. If you need to make an amends that you're scared of, you can always talk to me. I'll be in the shaking hands line. You can give me your phone number. I also need sponsees, so you can give me your number too. You know, I got a minute, and I'm going to spend it on God. Got a minute there? You know, as I said, I come from a family of, you know, vehemently not religious people. And I, you know, came to believe in this program, in this higher power that we're asked to believe in, and it really ended up firing my imagination, where I thought that, you know, I would never be able to embrace the God that everybody else has. I made up a little acronym early on because I kept hearing God in my understanding, so I had GOMU, and you know, and I would just look for God everywhere. I would just look for God everywhere. And I'm, you know, I like things to be tangible, and I still do that. And like in the past couple of weeks, like while I was on vacation, I started to think of God as a hammock. You know, he's kind of like, if you lie there and you let go and you let him rock you, he'll take you. You know, he'll take you. And you just, and I just have to trust, you know, that God's always got my back. He's always there. And goodbye. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Nye.
Hi, my name is Nye. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
My sobriety date is May 27th, 2004. My sponsor is Rajesh. I am working on 9 and living in 10, 11, and 12. And it is so amazing to be here and actually to be sober. I did not come from an alcoholic home, but there was definitely alcoholism running rampant in various parts of the family. I caught on to it at an early age. I drank and I drank and I drank, and it was really fun. And then it was fun with drama. And then it was drama, and then it was just bad. And, I mean, it's, you know, it just, it brought me to a place of, that it speaks about in the big book, just that, like, incomprehensible demoralization of, like loneliness, like one can't even fathom. And I mean, in my story, it's 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I was like making the rounds of French mental institutions. I love AA. Only could you say that in AA and would people laugh. And so I'm a card-carrying member of the slipper crowd. But it was France, so they were chicer. It wasn't just paper. And so I was doing the rounds of the asylums. I was in a long-term relationship. I had those moments where, like, this person said to me, like, okay, Nye, they were called my explosions, like when these things would go wrong. And one night, like, he looked at me and just said, Nye, tonight, like, no explosion. And I was like, okay, I promise. Like, I absolutely promise. This was at the very end of the relationship. That night, I slugged his best friend and tried to push him off the balcony of our third-floor apartment. And that was the drama part. And then it got worse. You know, I mean, it was like, by then I'd like was trying to get sober. I would do like a 2-month stint. I did a 30-day rehab. That didn't work out so well. Tried at different points, like getting a sponsor, not listening to them. That didn't work so well. And, you know, finally it was like a year after my asylum tour that I was like, I found myself in London because Paris was the problem. So there I was in like a nice area of London in a nice apartment, had just lost the nice job. And it was, you know, just once again, me alone in a room, hungover. And my first thought was not AA. It was, I haven't tried therapy for a while. And thank God I went to this woman who was recommended. Friends had been saying, like, 6 months before, like, oh, you should go to this woman. You'll just love her. Turns out she was an addiction specialist. And so I told her my story in about, I don't know, four or five minutes. And she sort of held up her hand and said, I think you sound very interesting. I'd love to work with you, but you're an alcoholic. And the only thing that works is AA. You have to go to meetings. I can't work with you unless you're sober. So that was Thursday. Friday, I did not go to a meeting, but I didn't drink. Saturday, I didn't go to a meeting, and I didn't drink. By Sunday, I was stark raving mad. And I was in my apartment and in London, and it was in the middle of the afternoon, and I was like pacing around in circles, and I remembered that there was a meeting around the corner from my house. And so I just like pulled on a jacket, ran around the corner, and there I met the man who's my sponsor today. So it was a beginner meeting. I put up my hand. He came up to me after the meeting. For those of you who know my sponsor, Rajesh, he was even more enthusiastic. 4 years ago, he like came up to me after the meeting. I'm like, still kind of hungover 4 days later, and he's, hi, my name's Rajesh. And so, like, it's like, I'll be your interim sponsor. And, like, I think, I can't remember if it was that day or the next day. He's like, do you pray? I'm like, no. I'm like, what? And I'm like, no. And he's like, okay, well, what I want you to do is go home tonight and get down on your knees and say, you know, if you can't say God, say whatever. Please, or thank you for granting me a clean and sober day today. Tomorrow morning when you wake up, get down on your knees. If you can't say God, say whatever. Please grant me a clean and sober day today. And that started my adventure. I was sober for about 7 months. I moved to New York. With strict instructions from Rajesh to get a home group, get a sponsor, coincidentally, God. 2 months later, Rajesh moved to New York and called me and asked if I wanted to meet for a coffee, no, Jamba Juice. And so we were sitting in Union, we met and we're sitting in Union Square, and he was like, okay, so who's your sponsor? And I was like, you are? And he was like, oh, God. And so at that point, he became my sponsor again, not realizing that he had never stopped being my sponsor. And he said that he had to check with his sponsor, Mark, Mark P., and because he was reworking the steps with Mark. Mark gave his okay as long as Rajesh was a step ahead of me. So we started in straight away on the steps. I did the very best job I could possibly do because at that point I was terrified of Mark P. He's actually totally sweet. But I was afraid that if I screwed up with Rajesh that I might become Mark P's special project. So I just absolutely did everything that Rajesh suggested, and you know it's been an amazing ride. And the longer I stay sober, and the more I do this work, and the more I'm able to bring God into every area of my life, like the more I realize that I don't know anything. Like there's so much more to be revealed. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. You know, and it's those things that when I really don't want to do something, you know, those conversations that you have with a sponsor, and you bring up an incident, and they suggest, well, okay, so what you need to do is call this person, tell them you lied. It's those sort of things, these actions that we don't understand, that seem so impossible at the time, that if I just do them, I get amazing results. And those are the things that I get the most benefit from. And so when it's, whether it's working with other men, taking them through the steps, speaking with a newcomer, I mean, it's like all these little actions that just add up to an amazing, amazing life. Thank you for my sobriety.
Our main speaker tonight is Liz.
You're going to make me cry. Hi, everybody. I'm Liz, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Wow, it is such an honor to be here. How did a girl like me end up in a place like this? Bob, thank you for the privilege and honor to speak here. And thank you, Nye and Julie, for a fantastic meeting. Just to follow suit, my sobriety date is January 28th, 1997. I am slowly chinking away at step 9, working on 10, 11, and 12. My fantastic sponsor is Thea, who is in Seattle, but I know is here in spirit. And I'm like, oh, God, it's early, right? And all day I've been thinking about the first time I saw my sponsor standing up here, and I remember she had such grace and dignity, and I was sitting out there, and I had about 6 years. I had no foundation, no program, no higher power to speak of, although he was obviously working in my life because he brought me into that room on that day. And I saw her looking all clean and beautiful, and she was talking about her story, and I wanted for the first time what someone had. And I was really willing to go to any lengths to get it. And I'm still willing to go to any lengths to get it, even though she doesn't live in New York City anymore. And I'm still so blown away with the time that she spends with me, that she gives to me, and all the direction and all of her patience. And trust me, it takes a lot of patience to work with me, and she has it. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful, and she has really helped me find a life beyond my wildest dreams. And most importantly, she's helped me find a higher power that makes that life possible. So I'd like to welcome everybody who's new. I'd like to welcome all the day counters. Welcome everybody who's visiting. Welcome, you know, it's an open meeting. If you're not an alcoholic and you're just checking us out, the medical community, other fellowships, whomever, however you ended up in this room, welcome. This is my home group. This is a safe, wonderful place to be. And I remember, like I said, sitting back there, and I was so scared of this meeting. There are a lot of people, and it seems like everybody knows each other, right? Except for you. And and that's the way I felt when I came in here. It just seemed like there was so much energy. And I had hit a place in my recovery that I was so desperate to do, to belong. I was so desperate to get better that I was willing to put aside what was comfortable to do what I was told. And that's really helped with my recovery greatly, is that my comfortability really didn't matter anymore, because I was so uncomfortable trying to stay comfortable that I was gonna drink. And this was my last shot. Like, this was really, I believe, this was the last stop for me, was this home group, was here. Because doing it my own way and, you know, coming and going as I pleased and not being accountable or responsible and not calling someone on a daily basis and not taking directions, especially ones that I don't understand or agree with, not, you know, doing it the Liz way, it was really just not working anymore. Not that it ever really did, but it was greatly apparent that it wasn't working for me. And I was in a lot of pain, and I was really, you know, I felt like I was dead on the inside. And I had to do a lot of work. There was a lot of work to do. So, but before I get into that, If you hear nothing else what I say tonight, if your mind is wandering about your busy day or what have you, I hope the one thing that you can take from this is that I love AA. I do. I have this amazing love for this program. And that is, you know, like I said, a gift from my higher power. It's a gift from God. And that is not me. Like, me standing up here being, you know, nobody cared what I had to say. You know, no, I had nothing to offer. I was, you know, I completely felt like I have no use to anyone. And I just felt, I was told I was bad and I was wrong. And I was thinking, at our Sunday night meeting, we had such a fantastic speaker. We had such a fantastic topic, and the speaker reminded me of this part of my story, where I was walking around in Boston Commons, which is, I got sober in Boston, and I was just 21, and I remember this woman came up to me. This was when before I got sober, and you know those people. It was this beautiful spring day, and these people would come up to you on the street, and they're like, "Have you found God? Have you, you know, do you, you know?" They're like, whether they're like psychics or whatever. And I stopped. I was like, "Why'd you pick me? What do you see in me? What is it about me that you see?" Like, and like, I think I scared her away, which I don't think was normal for her. But I was like, "What?" I was following her. Like, "What is it? Why did you stop me? What is it? Like, what's wrong with me? Can you tell me what's wrong with me, please?" And that was like my battle cry. Please, God, somebody tell me what is wrong with me. Because I had this like strange feeling that something wasn't right. And the irony of the story is that like I didn't think that it was alcohol. And then as soon as I stopped drinking, I thought it was only alcohol. So I thought, well, I put down alcohol, so my life is fine. I'm good now. See you later. And then I, you know, as I said, came to find out that was not the case for me. A little bit about my story. I don't really think that I've been trying to think back to my relationship with my higher power, my relationship with God, because I really believe that I have this like spiritual thirst, this thirst for life, and the only thing that could quench that thirst for me was alcohol. I thought I was so like unbelievably afraid, and at the meeting that I had the honor to speak at on Sunday, we were listening to the Joe and Charlie CDs, and they were talking about, on the fourth step, about how we have this, you know, which will eventually become my fourth step. Well, I walk around with intense resentment, deep fear, and shame and remorse for the harms that I had caused others. And it still blows me away. How did they know? Like, how could they know that that's what I walked around with? This immense shame, this immense guilt, but I couldn't stop. I was completely incapable of stopping. I didn't know how to stop. I didn't even know if I wanted to stop, because if I stopped, then what was left of me? Like, this is what defined me, this behavior, this alcoholic behavior. I was a blackout drinker from the beginning, and I liked it hard and I liked it fast. And I like to, you know, the book says that we drink, alcoholics drink essentially because they like the effect of alcohol. And that was true. I didn't drink it for the taste. I didn't do very much for the taste. I like the effect. I just want to get from point A to point Z, and let's just skip the rest of the alphabet as quickly as possible. And I didn't know that people even controlled drinking. Like, that was a phenomenon to me when I came in here. And I truly thought everybody blacked out from the minute they started drinking. I mean, I thought normal people blacked out. Why would you stop drinking before you blacked out? Like, I still like have a really hard time comprehending that, but I guess people do. Which is a good thing that I'm here. And the pain just was getting so great. But I didn't think it was alcohol, and I really believe in a lot of instances alcohol actually saved my life. You know, because I contemplated, you know, suicide. I contemplated, you know, just making the ultimate sacrifice all the time. But you know, I still had alcohol, if nothing left. If I couldn't have any relationships to speak of, and I couldn't hold down a job, and I couldn't pay rent, and I couldn't really look the world in the eye, at least I could drink, and that was fine for me. And until it wasn't anymore, until that magic elixir, that one thing that kept me going, started. It turned on me. It cut me to ribbons, as Bill said, and it became like I didn't know what was going to happen to me when I drank. I could drink, you know, one And I could black out. I could drink like 30 and be cold stone sober, which was awful. Like it just stopped working for me. It just stopped working. And you know, how did I end up here? I don't know. I know that I had a friend who got sober. I had a couple of friends who tried this, and I had one friend who got sober, and he's still in my life today. And I called him to find out if he knew what was wrong with me, because I didn't know. That lady in the comments didn't know, so maybe he knew what was wrong with me. And he, you know, I called him on his anniversary date, and that, you know, that's such an important part of my story, because he planted the seed. He worked a program, and he had an anniversary to speak of. He knew when it was, which is amazing, and he planted that seed for me. And it took me about a month later, and you know, I woke up on this floor of this apartment that I didn't pay for, and like, and I just had that moment of surrender, that one tiny little glimpse of sunlight. That I knew that I was in so much trouble. And I think, I can't remember the name, it was Julie said, I knew I could have been a lot worse, but I knew I was in a lot of trouble for me. And if I didn't get help, I was going to be in even bigger trouble. And then, you know, one of my favorite pastimes when I was drinking is I used to come up with the headlines of when they found my body. Because I was so sure that they were going to find my body. Like, Jewish girl drives off the bridge and kills cat, you know? I mean, that's what I thought. Like, I was so consumed with self and so consumed with fear that I, you know, I couldn't see beyond that. And so I woke up this morning And I called AA. Well, I thought I called Al-Anon, but they actually transferred me to AA. I mean, I like to think it was because I was slurring. So fantastic, the people at Intergroup, they answered the phone. This is how it works here. Like, people answered the phones, you know? That's important. If they didn't answer the phone, I wouldn't be standing here. So anyway, he answered the phone, and that was Tuesday. I got my first meeting list in the mail on Wednesday. My first meeting was called Axe Murderers in Boston. And I went down the stairs, and there were men yelling and screaming and jumping over the table, and I'm like, I'm home. I've arrived, and you know, I wish I could say really that I did feel like at home, but I didn't. I thought I was too young. It was a phase. Nobody understands me. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's my mom. Maybe it's my job. Oh, I don't have a job. Maybe it's my school. Maybe it's, you know, maybe if I just got a boyfriend, if I was 10 pounds thinner, like maybe it was anything else. But for whatever reason, which is why I believe that God is totally working in my life, even though I didn't know it, feel it, or see it. So I walked down those stairs, and I sat down in that seat, and I stayed. And this girl came in, and she asked me to go out for coffee, and miraculously enough, I went, which I'm, you know, again, not me. Not me. Liz likes to hold herself up in apartments. Another favorite pastime from drinking is I used to lock myself in my parents' basement in the middle of summer with a bottle of wine and listen to Christmas music. Because I really, really, I don't know why, because it's just what I did. And I just like to cry, and I just really love to be this. I just really had, like, I felt, like, so bereft of love. And my mother would call down and be like, Elizabeth, what's wrong with you? And I'd be like, ah, I don't know. And which is true, I didn't know. So I'm definitely an isolator, isolator by nature. And as my sponsor says, only alcoholics treat loneliness with isolation. And that is, you know, I found it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And so I went with this girl, this woman, for coffee, and she just introduced me to this fantastic network of young people in AA, and I did a lot of fellowship, and I went to a lot of young people's meetings, and we did a lot of Trivial Pursuit, and we did a lot of coffee and diners, and then I moved to New York one year, and I had no foundation. They told me to find a sponsor in a home group, but I didn't really want to. I mean, that's just the truth. Like, I couldn't find the perfect sponsor, and I couldn't find that home group. And, you know, in New York, It was just different. You said the Lord's Prayer. You didn't give away big books in the beginning of the meeting. Like, you just, it was just different. And, like, I so closed myself off from, like, years of opportunity because alcohol, I thought, was my problem. And I hadn't drank in a year, so I thought my problem was licked. So I had no reason to come to AA because I had a problem with drinking. I'm no longer drinking. Thank you very much. I will see you later. And I ended up spending that next 5 years in a downward cycle of abusive relationships, going from job to job, not talking to my family, not being able to pay my rent, and I was just, I, again, couldn't look the world in the eye. But I wasn't drinking. And that is my cautionary tale, is that I wasn't drinking, and I thought that that was enough. And I was so scared. And I was so in so much pain, and I was at the time living with someone who I'd met in the rooms, and he had gone back out, and that was a wake up call for me. It really was, and I thought I had three options, which is I can go out, I can keep doing the way what I'm doing, which like did not seem very appealing, and neither did going out really. I didn't really have a desire to drink. I had a desire to jump in front of a subway, or I could try this AA thing. So I came back and I sat up front and I went to meetings that I wasn't going to be distracted, but I would be able to hear the message. And I was really willing at that point to go to any lengths. And ever since then it's been, oh my God, like what a journey. Like if you saw me when I walked in here when I had, 6 years from what you see before you. I mean, what a journey. I mean, it's really amazing. I walked in here and I looked like a deer caught in headlights. Like my eyes, and I was shaking, like I shaked a lot because I was just, like I had so much energy. I'd be bouncing off of the walls. I mean, I couldn't even sit still in my seat. And this is 6 years without a drink. And I knew I wanted it. And I remember when I there was this woman that I met in my last counting days in Boston, and she said to me, she's like, you have a really big desire to get better. And she was right. I did. I had a desire to get better, but I didn't have a desire to follow direction. I did have a desire to, surrender myself to this program and to have a psychic change and to sit down and do the work, to read the big book and to, do what my sponsor says no matter what. I mean, I don't have to like what she says. I just have to do what she says. And that's what I found, is I found this, I found this one sponsor who before my current sponsor, who really, really helped, pave the path for me. She really pointed me in the direction that would find me, my current sponsor, and help me find the journey that I'm on right now. And she said them one of the most important things that anyone could have ever said to me. And she said to me, and no one had ever said to me before. And she looked me right in the eye and she says to me, you're selfish. And you think someone who read the big book would know that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my problem, but I never heard that before. So she told me that I was selfish, and I knew that she was right. And I knew that the jig was up. And I knew that I had to start making some changes, or else I was going to push everyone who I ever cared about out of my life. And I was doing a really good job, and I was going to use the guise of AA to do it, which I didn't want to do because this was my last hope. And she told me to go and make some friends, and that I couldn't rely, call her, 4 or 5 times a day, an hour at a time, that I needed to find some fellowship. And I started listening to meetings, and I found some women who sounded great, and I started following them, and they landed me here. They were all Atlantic Group members. I mean, go figure. And so I followed them here, and they're still in my life today, and I still, they're still that's my fellowship. But, I can't get sober on fellowship alone. So they brought me here to the Atlantic Group, and I found my sponsor, like I said, on that day when she was speaking at the meeting, and she had given off so much dignity and grace, and I wanted what she has, and I go after it with, like, the same veracity that I go after my drinking. that I went after drinking. And I call her every day, and I've taken, you know, I've taken suggestions. And I wish for me that my recovery was always graceful. I wish that I didn't stumble along the way and I could say that it's been this, like, wonderful, graceful ride. But that wouldn't be the truth. For me, I found out that life on life's terms can be painful, that it can be hard, and that things don't always work out the way I want them to. People don't always do the things that they say they're going to do. And I used to walk around, but it's not fair. It's not fair, Thea. Why don't they know who I am? And part of my journey has been really digesting this idea of surrender and acceptance. And really, I love that Julie talked about the St. Francis prayer, and really incorporate that into my life. That the one that always comes up for me over and over is, where there is wrong, I always thought my job was to bring right. Right? Does that make sense? Because, you know, we're darkness, light, hatred, love, wrong, right? Right? Justice, something. And it's not. Where there is wrong, to bring the spirit of forgiveness. And I stumble and I trip on that one, and I want to bring right so badly, because I really know what right is. And very often nobody asks me, Liz, what's right? But, you know, so that's one that I've had to struggle with. And I struggled with this idea of surrender, and I struggled with this idea of acceptance, and this idea that God is the answer to all of my problems today. All of them. When I did my second step, I just, like, breezed right through it. I'm like, yeah, God, got it, no problem. Next, let's go to the good stuff, like the fourth step. And over, it comes down to this question. Like, the first, you know, I admit that I'm powerless over alcohol, that my life is unmanageable when it's left to my own terms. But God is everything? Well, sure, he's everything about drinking, but everything? And, like, you know, can we negotiate that? Like 80% maybe? Okay, 95? But it's everything. That means everywhere. That means my entire life. That means the whole ball of wax. He is in charge of everything. And if he's not, if I take back that little corner of 10%, this little bit of whatever, I start reeling in my will really quick. And then I'm stuck in this place of restless, irritable, and discontent without even realizing it. I mean, this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful without even realizing it. So I have this, like, daily reprieve, and it's based on my spiritual condition. And I can't even, you know, I've been thinking about this idea of going from, you know, from bridge to shore, and this idea of faith and having faith but not believing in God, or not having God in your life. And, you know, the book talks, I've been thinking about this a lot today, and the book talks about how we have this, you know, how we're abject belief, have abject faith in sciences, and we have abject faith in, like, people, and we have abject faith in, like, you know, I have faith in you, and I have faith in you, and my sponsor's like, you're great, you're on the right path, just move it, you know, move it to the faith of your higher power. When it all comes down to it, when it's all said and done, that these steps, this beautiful, perfect program, these steps are laid out to get me to my higher power so I can be of service to others. And if you're new and you might sound like that does not sound very appealing, that's fine. I don't know if it would have sounded appealing to me, but this is just what's worked for me. This is what's given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. What's given me friends to show up in my life. Like, I am not that woman who starts screaming on the subway anymore. I am not that person who starts crying in Dwayne Reed when I don't have enough money in my account to pay for my Band-Aids. Like, that, you know, I was so unmanageable. Like, my life was so completely unmanageable that this simple program, these following these directions, this higher power has given me an opportunity to be someone that I always wanted to be. I always wanted to be able to walk down the street with my head held high, to look anyone in the face and say hello, and not be scared, and not run by the smallest fear of interaction with human beings. Like, I, you know, to be able to be part of life at last. And I really feel that I am part of life at last. But, you know, it's a daily reprieve, like I said, and it's based on my spiritual condition. So part of that for me is to having the ability and the honor of working with others. And I really believe that the reason that I went through this book was not to give me some peace of mind and some you know, a little bit of relief, but it gave me freedom. It gave me freedom of bondage of self, and it also set me up to be of service to others, to help other women walk through this program and to watch their lives changed. Because I don't even see my life half the time, but I'm watching them, and I'm watching them walk through fear. I'm watching them change. I'm watching them grow. And, I mean, the most amazing thing is if you stick around for a little while, you see people come in and you see them celebrating their watch. Like, I remember when Jim came in. Like, I remember when Roland came in. And, you know, I remember watching these people, like, literally transform into these beautiful people. And it doesn't even become about me anymore. Like, I don't even, you know, I just have to show up. Like, that's all I have to do is just show up and you know, suit up and show up, and that's all I have to do. And I get to watch transformations. I get to watch families reunited, and I get to watch people get the job of their dreams and move to foreign countries or New Jersey and have babies. Like, I get to sit back and be witness to all of this. You know, and it's amazing to me. It's amazing to me. You know, my recovery hasn't been extremely glamorous, but it's been mine. And I'm so grateful for it. I'm so grateful to have found this group and to have found this message that I can, like I said, have relationships today. And part of what's going on for me today, literally today, is part of my story that I had an opportunity to go to, that I had an opportunity to really look at is I drank my way right out of college. Thank you. I literally drank my way out of college. I gave this wonderful opportunity that I had to go, I gave this opportunity up because I was an alcoholic, really, because I drank every night and I didn't go to school, and I thought sort of through osmosis that I was going to be able to just glide through, but that's not the case. They kicked me out several times, and I went to multiple different colleges. And if you look at my transcripts, this sort of looks like Swiss cheese, like F's sprinkling between D's and a couple of B's. I mean, I hear people when they get sober that they're like, and I was a CEO, and I have family, and I was like, that was not my story. I was like a college dropout, you know, and I graduated by the skin of my teeth. I mean, believe me, I have the transcripts to prove it. And you know, I always had this desire to, you know, I didn't think I was a dumb girl. I just thought I was a lazy one. And I thought I was, you know, I was just a drunk, you know. I just went to parties, and I cared more about fitting in, and I couldn't understand how people got good grades. And I just found out right before the meeting that I've been accepted to graduate school. Which is a miracle. It's a miracle, and it's something I'm so... But the only reason I applied was because I saw other people do it. And I saw people in this room go back to school. And I reached out, and I got so much help on my essay. Like, my essay doesn't look like the one I wrote. I had so many people help me with this. It's true. And now I have an opportunity to do it again. I have a chance to go back and set that right. And I have an opportunity to be the woman that I always wanted to be. Like, I always wanted to, you know, prove to the world that I can do this. And now I have this, whether I'm going to do it or not is yet to be seen. But I have a chance now. I have a shot, and that's what AA has given me. That's what you've given me by sharing your stories with me from the podium, from, you know, every time you would tell me these miraculous stories, like someone's in detox or in jail, and then they're like, you know, presidents of universities. I'm like, how does that happen? How does it happen? I mean, it only happens here. Like, you only hear about that here. You don't hear about that anywhere else. Like, amazing. Like it's an amazing, life-changing, literally life-changing opportunity. It happens here. And, you know, I love this idea, like, we always get a second chance. And I came back to the rooms after having after being dry, really, for 6 years. I was so uncomfortable because I wasn't a newcomer counting days. But, you know, so I was sitting there in the thick of it in my disease, in this, like, spiritual malady, in this disease that I couldn't look the world in the eye. And I was so dead, and I didn't know how to do it. And what I realized is that I had a shot because I didn't drink. And I could lose all of this just by the reach of an arm. It's just arm length away. I'm so not immune to that. You know, I have this, one of my part-time jobs is working in a restaurant, and sometimes wine will trickle on my hand. And I'm like, I could just like lick my finger and it would all be over. Just like that. It would all be over. The relationships I've built, the friendships, the romantic relationships, the beautiful life that God has given me, I could like lose it like that. You know, I'm not immune. None of us, I don't think any of us are. It's, you know, we can take it back in a moment. I'm grateful for today that I don't have the desire to drink. And the book says that, you know, if it does come up, which it might, so if you feel that it does, it doesn't mean that it's not working. When you get to step 10 or 11, you know, you will recoil from it as if from a hot flame. But if you're before there and the idea of drinking is in your head and you think it's a really good idea, just give it another 24 hours. Just keep it in today. Do it tomorrow. Just give it one more shot. You don't have to ever drink again. And if you don't drink, then the world just opens up. I mean, rocketed to the fourth dimension is really a very kind way to put it. I mean, this world, this life, and I had no idea sitting in my parents' basement that this was going to be my life. It's the life that I always dreamed of, and I'm just so grateful to have so many faces in this big room that I recognize, and it's just by showing up a day at a time and surrendering to this wonderful program, so thanks.